Hello, I'm Greg Livingston, and I'm here with Tyler Pomplin. Tyler's here to talk with us about Block Game. Tyler, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing all right. So Block Game is like a mix between a falling puzzle, color matching kind of game, and a platforming game. And first things first, let's get the most important question out of the way. What's your favorite color, and is it a color of block in Block Game?
I'd say my favorite colors probably have to be orange, but that is not a block color in the game. But there is a playable character that is orange, though.
Okay, so you have that method of expression. So, like any falling puzzle game, score plays a large part. There's a two-player competitive mode where two players try to outscore each other, and of course, the normal mode is an endless mode, right?
Yep. Just goes until you die.
Yeah, and so the goal there would just be to get a high score. How do you construct the rules determining score? How do you use score?
The sort of biggest mechanic involving score is the combos. So every point in your combo meter makes every block you match worth additional points.
Just to confirm, like, what is a combo?
So for every block you match, your combo meter goes up by one. So if you match three blocks in a line, then your combo goes up to three. And then if you match another three, it'll go up to six. So combos last between 2 and 3 seconds based on how high your combo meter is. It decreases like very, very slightly the higher it gets. And the general idea behind it is to kind of encourage players to take risks and match a lot of stuff in quick succession instead of just kind of playing really safe and passive and only matching when they feel like super safe to do so.
I gotcha. To keep the pace of gameplay fast. What differentiates a good player from a bad player? Like, there's the score, and obviously you could look up, who scored higher, but what's different about a good player and a bad player?
A lot of this game comes down to space management, because you're trying to dodge the falling blocks so your character doesn't get squished, among other things like squirrel blocks that climb down the walls and goat blocks that charge at you. So, like, the biggest difference I see between the more skilled players and the people who are kind of newer at the game and haven't had so much experience with it is that the good players are more proactive in moving blocks around and creating good opportunities for themselves, whereas the less experienced players will sometimes just wait around for blocks to drop and then kind of react to that.
When you say space management, then you mean like being able to plan a couple steps ahead and leaving your options open and kind of trying to guide blocks into more favorable positions?
Yeah, it's a combination of that, like creating opportunities for yourself and also managing all the blocks so that you can stay safe and react to other potential threats that fall down.
Okay. So it sounds like you've seen a wide breadth of people that you're able to tell, this is what newbies are like, this is what more advanced people are like.
Yeah, I've had a sort of like core group of people that test the game for the last couple of months, which is like 3 or 4 different people. So they're more used to it and they kind of get how the game works. And at the Gamescape event, there were obviously a lot of people who had never played it before. So it was really interesting to see how like less experienced players would react their first couple times playing the game.
Yeah, I can't think the last time I played a game for several months. I took that for granted. So block game is obviously a mix of two typical genres. You have your falling block puzzle games and your platforming action games. And those both have a lot of different maybe tropes or traditions. And I was wondering how you strike a balance between those two.
One of the biggest things for me personally going into this game was just having the sense of controlling a character. Because, well, I've always liked the idea of puzzle games where you have this sort of really simple sort of goal and mechanic and you just kind of do it efficiently and smartly to get points. But I've never been able to really get engrossed in many of them because you don't feel like you have that much control because you're just kind of abstractly controlling things instead of having some sort of personification of yourself in the game. So it made a really weird disconnect for me personally. And I just kind of had the idea of a puzzle game where you control a character within it.
So you mentioned that having the agency there of a platformer was important, but you liked the simple rules of a puzzle game. Were there any other features of each genre that were important to you to keep in block game?
I think the whole idea of simplicity from puzzle games is really important because it's really easy for a lot of like platformers or RPGs or pretty much any kind of game to just add too much stuff and overcomplicate it. So I really wanted to focus on this whole gameplay loop of moving around, picking up blocks, and matching them. And I didn't want to stray too far from that.
Yeah, when you were talking about the simplicity of puzzle games, I guess gameplay loop occurred to me in the back of my head too. The idea that you have like one simple process you're constantly repeating. Whereas I guess in a typical platformer, you know, around the next bend, there might be a different kind of enemy you have to learn to interact with.
Yeah, in most platformers, you'll constantly find new obstacles. But, I mean, block game has it too with the different special block types, but everything is still based around this whole picking up and placing blocks. I didn't want to introduce any, like, weird mechanic that only one kind of block did or something.
When you were building a platformer in a block game context, how did you get the two to work together? Because, like, it struck me that in Super Mario Brothers or something, part of the difficulty is that Mario can stand, you know, halfway into a tile. If every Goomba lined up perfectly on a tile and Mario lined up perfectly on tiles himself, then it would be trivially easy to land on enemies. So it feels like it's inherent to platformers that you kind of have this fluid movement. But then in block puzzle games, it would be pretty bad if there was fluid movement. Even as early as Tetris, everything moves in discrete tiles. So how did you get these two systems to work together?
Block game does kind of have fluid movement in certain respects. So blocks fall at blocks will fall at a pretty constant rate, and they don't snap to the tiles. And then there's, of course, the goat and squirrel blocks that can move horizontally that also move. But whenever a block stops moving, it'll always snap to this grid. And usually the movement is so small that you won't even notice it. So it doesn't like look too out of place. But the general idea is that the player can still be pushed by stuff that's not really snapped to the grid, but whenever it's absolutely needed to be interacted with or like pathing purposes when other blocks fall down, it'll always be perfectly aligned.
That's interesting. So that, like, while it's moving and a hazard, the player interacts with it on a fluid pixel-by-pixel basis. But then, once it's set in place and you might want to match it up with something, that's when it snaps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And like you mentioned, there are some special blocks, like blocks that are on fire, blocks that charge you. And what player skills would you say these emphasized?
So the animal blocks, which are the squirrel and the goat, which got a lot of anger towards them during Gamescape. they're meant to be more immediate threats because the whole general sort of going back to space management, the whole idea is that if the player doesn't manage their space well, they'll end up kind of screwing themselves, not giving themselves enough room to dodge falling blocks. But the squirrel and the goat blocks sort of mix up the pattern. So instead of, like, just watching above to make sure nothing falls on you, you have some threats down immediately next to you that you have to dodge.
Right, kind of walking and chewing gum at the same time, dealing with multiple threats.
Yeah. And then there's also, like, the bomb blocks and the pinatas, which give you a pretty good opportunity to get a lot of points, but they also present their own sort of hazard. So if you activate a bomb, it'll blow up everything around it, but you can also be blown up by it. So there's this whole sort of risk-reward thing going on with those.
Okay. So it sounds like one of your core concerns was pacing, and the puzzle games tend to have this long game where you plan out how you space blocks so that by the end of it you can rack up a high score, but it takes quite a lot of build-up. And in block game, you have the combo timer, and you have the animal blocks and the bomb blocks, both of which demand more immediate attention from the player.
Yeah, the general idea is I wanted players who were, actively going out of their way to set stuff up and to clear space. I wanted to give them more opportunities to sort of get points and reward themselves with the bomb and pinata. But at the same time, I didn't want players who were, panicking and kind of running out of space to feel immediately pressured by these really big threats.
So those extra score opportunities are optional difficulty that you could take on?
Yeah.
Okay. And how do you find a balance between spawning regular blocks and spawning the special blocks? Obviously, not every block is going to be a special block.
So the majority of blocks that spawn are obviously the basic ones. But there is a sort of hidden bonus value. So every time a special block doesn't spawn, that increases, and the likelihood of a special block spawning increases a little bit. And then when one does spawn, that goes back down to zero. So you could get pretty unlucky and get a bunch of lava blocks at once, but it's also not super likely. I'm still tuning it a little bit, but the general idea is to have it be sort of pseudo RNG, where it's weighted to kind of give you a consistent amount of threats throughout the game.
Right, so that it's indeterminate, but you know that eventually something's going to mix it up.
Yeah. I think the rate's pretty good where it is now, because there's a new threat roughly every 10 seconds or so. So the player still has a pretty good amount of time to manage everything they need to, but they never have enough time to just kind of sit there and take it easy.
Nobody was ever bored.
Yeah.
And last but not least, when it comes to the theory of video games, which would you say is most important? The game itself, the developer, or the player?
That's a pretty tough question, because a lot of people would say that you're just designing for the player because they're your audience and you want them to enjoy your game. But at the same time, if you have a very clear, specific vision for the game, you don't want to compromise it just because you think people like something else better. If you had a character that served a very specific role in the story, but they were kind of controversial, you wouldn't want to get rid of them just because some people might be a bit offended by it. But I think gameplay-wise, it's very important that the experience for the player is really smooth and enjoyable. And you don't want to have tons of really clunky menus or kind of underwhelming mechanics. All the core gameplay things that the player directly interacts with should be really polished and smooth and pretty fun to use. But content-wise, I think it's more important to kind of keep the game's vision intact.
Right. You want to be authentic to your vision and make sure you accurately communicate it to the player, which means being authentic to yourself and making sure the player receives it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for joining us, or for joining me.
Yeah, of course.